Hello, everyone, and welcome to Movie Club. Different location today because we are setting up for Olympic board games and we don't want to be in the way. So we're up here, ready to talk about the new Paul Giamatti. You know, you're waiting. What's Paul Giamatti going to do next? It was the holdovers. Go ahead.
You didn't even notice.
What?
I have a lazy eye. I've been exaggerating it just for this episode. No, you didn't even say anything. I got it all ready.
You didn't notice I put on a Paul Giamatti sweater and you didn't care about that. So I guess we don't give a shit about each other.
G. Amati.
Okay. All right.
That's what I say. That's Italian for I don't give a shit. Yeah, I saw this movie. I picked this, didn't I? Mm. We're still in Oscar season, so it's kind of like who wants to pick what.
We're not even really picking. We're just kind of going through like what was nominated the most and watching those.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I actually saw this around the holidays because I heard I had people tell me, "Oh, new holiday classic. You got to see the holdovers."
Holiday classic, you say?
Yeah. Which I think that was not a great setup for
this
movie.
That's a terrible setup for this movie.
Like, I'm going into this like, oh, this is a new Rudolph? Like, what are you talking about? And yeah. It's not. I'm really done. Let me just say, this might be a short episode because, again, we are tending to stuff with Olympic board games right now and things like that. So this won't be the longest episode.
No,
I'm just apologizing ahead.
It's going to be the longest
one. I'm going to take up about 70% of it with a rant.
Okay.
I have people tell me that kind of thing or I hear about it every holiday season. Oh, this is a new Christmas classic. And it's just like a movie that takes place and Christmas is happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like I'm real tired of that.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I thought it was a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
And I asked you like, you're like, it's not, it takes place during Christmas. It's not a Christmas movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I see this all the time. Oh dude, did you see the new, Paul Thomas Anderson movie? That's a new Christmas classic. I'm like, Phantom
Boogie
Thread?
Nights. Oh, Phantom Thread, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's holidays at one point.
No, The Master.
You know what I mean? It's just like, these are not, you know, now you could say, well, Rocco Home Alone, that doesn't have like Santa or Rudolph or whatever
that's
in it.
No.
But it's centered around
it's a
Christmas
movie.
Is getting mangled in front of them and something went wrong in the family.
You can't tell me the plot line of trying to get home to your son for Christmas is not a Christmas movie.
Yeah,
that's a Christmas
yeah.
movie.
So, but this to me, it is definitely during Christmas. Christmas is present, but I didn't feel like I can't see busting this out. It's Christmas, guys. Holdovers
well,
time.
You know, I will
I don't
say,
know what.
I have seen a lot of people talking about that. And they definitely said, oh, yeah, I've already seen The Holdovers like 4 times. It's like a feel-good movie.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I plan on watching it every holiday season. I
didn't feel that way.
No.
At all. At all.
I don't
get that at all.
I can't imagine. Like, let me just, I mean, I liked this movie. But I can't imagine being like, I have to see it right now again.
No.
I got to go again to see it. It's like, no, I don't. What?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I will say when the movie started, I don't know what it is. Quentin Tarantino does this a lot. Whenever you use the 70s title cards for like, you know, Miramax or whatever, I'm in. That is like, that will get me into a movie faster than anything else. I can't tell you why.
I don't know
why I love that aesthetic so much, but it's this that's my jam, dude.
Yeah.
Love that.
I have to work through this next part.
Uh-oh.
I don't know what to think about this.
Okay.
Something in me gets really... This is so funny because I wouldn't have been like this 10 years ago. I don't know what changed.
Mm-hmm.
But when... they're going for that vibe with this movie.
Yes.
Throughout it.
Yes.
And then the movie starts and it's 4:3. This movie is not widescreen.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of has this softer film kind of look, you know, whatever. It's funny. I think 10 years ago, I would have been like, oh, I love that. And now I just get like, shut the fuck up. Just film the fucking movie.
Really?
I don't know what it is. I felt this way during, is a weird, another movie that weird to bring up at this point, I guess. But The Lighthouse did this where it's like, oh, it's 4x3, like dingy old black and white film. And I'm like, great. Hmm. I don't know what it is. I'm at a point now, because even like I did that in fucking when we shot Sequence Erase in 2014, mm-hmm. I was like, no, these certain scenes, film them in 4x3 mini DV.
Right.
And I don't know. Now I'm at a point where I'm just like, I don't care about the gimmicks.
Oh, the gimmicks. I love the thought of like extra little like, oh, this is a fun little detail. Or yeah. We even talked about that with Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
When they were using like the black and white, like old school footage for like
That was cool.
But isn't that a gimmick?
But I didn't feel like that was, I still felt like that was totally like still modern filmmaking. Like it was cool they did that, you know, behind the scenes. But if you never knew that, it was still just, you know, okay, some black and white scenes in a color movie, you know. I don't know, with this I'm just like, I can't explain why I'm like that.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm like, every time I see a movie or we purposely filmed it an old way, I'm like, yeah, cool. I don't know why it bugs me. Like people are trying to get an extra thing out of it, like you'll like it more or something. And
I think it's just trying to put you in that place. It's just trying to give you that atmosphere.
Yeah. I guess I just feel like there's other ways to do that.
I just feel like I appreciate the little extra step. And like, there's a lot of movies that, you know, like this is a stupid example, but have you seen the movie Maverick with Mel Gibson?
I don't know. No, I never did.
Oh, I should pick that because I actually used to love that movie.
Yeah.
So that's going to be probably a 5. Because I watched it when I was a kid. That's the criteria. No, but that movie is very true to being in the West, and it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
And then there's one scene when they're playing poker, and it's like a modern-day country song. It's like, why the fuck did you put this in here? Yeah,
hey, I'm like halfway through at least Mad Men, and it's been awesome. Great show. Can't recommend it enough. And there's one episode that opens with a Decemberist song, and I was like,
the Decemberist?
Stop.
I like the Decemberists, but why? Yeah. They shouldn't be in that show.
That's the only thing. Blown away how consistently good the show is.
Yeah.
And then that was like a fucking stinky cheese wheel
in
the middle of the
road. And that's what that
was
for Maverick, where it's like, why is this a montage with a new song?
Yeah.
This is a Western.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Boardwalk Empire at all?
No, I never did.
That was a great show. I think you would like it, but
I was just talking about that show today, actually.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I was watching The Wedding Singer with Lennon, and Steve Buscemi's in that.
Yeah.
And he's fucking hilarious. And I was like, usually, you know, like, he's like, he can be pretty scary, too. And I was like mentioning Boardwalk Empire. That's funny.
No, but that show, the opening theme song was like one of the Rolling Stones played a song now. Like, they never broke in the show. It was always old 20 music. You know, or they had a new artist. They had, like, what's their name? They had, I can't think off the top of my head, but they would have modern artists sometimes even for the credits, but they would cover a 20s song.
That's fine with me.
Which was cool, because it still fit. You know what I mean? It sounded new, but it was something old. But the opening things are, it was like fucking, the guy from I want to say Joe Parra, but that's not the guitarist, that's a comedian, guitarist from like Aerosmith playing a riff, and it's like, yeah, you should have just found a cool 20s song and played that would have been a cool theme song.
You know what, it is funny though, Jamar, to your point.
I was gonna say, I don't know what is up my ass about this. They filmed this in a certain 70s way, and I just feel like That gets put on the pedestal above everything else a lot of times. So I think that's why, you know, I'm watching Mad Men. They don't try to like film that different. It's the 60s, but it's like just a well-shot TV show. And I think I prefer just letting the material speak for itself. I don't know why. I'm not saying I'm right.
Yeah.
I have a bug up my ass about it lately, and it's only lately. A few years ago, I wouldn't have felt that way. I don't know what changed. I don't know what's wrong with me.
I want to clarify really quick, too, because if you establish your movie like, Hateful Eight starts with the White Stripes song. You've established that music is off. You can do whatever you want to do. Like,
yeah, that's like that from the beginning.
You
told me
from the beginning that it's gonna have some weird elements to it, and I'm in.
Yeah, Mad Men. That was like 20 episodes in.
And the Maverick. It's at the end of the movie they do that. But it's like, well, you didn't do this before.
So you can't
do it now.
Yeah.
What I was going to say, Rocco, is I do like it because I feel like I would rather it look like a 70s movie than a 2024 movie. And then it will always be looking like a 2024 movie because like it will change. Yeah. Filming changes and it will evolve. And so it will always be dated back. Like you look at fucking Gladiator. That is such a early 2000s movie, the way it's shot and all that stuff. Like, and it's a good movie, but it's shot that way. I like it where it's like based in the 70s and now it's a timeless looking thing because it looks like it's from the 70s and it's not gonna be dated to this time.
Yeah, I guess so. But I kind of have grown to appreciate things looking dated to a point. Like, you know, Willy Wonka still, that looks painfully late 60s, early 70s. And I think that just enhances it.
Yes, I agree. But no, that definitely does. But I don't know. I'm just feeling like.
But I know, to your point, we have the technology to now to replicate these things. And it's like, well, why not use that? Like, hey, there's a certain aesthetic from this time. And now we can just achieve that. There's no reason to not do it. I don't know what my deal is that something trips my radar lately. Only in the last few years. I don't know what changed that.
I don't know.
Everything you're saying makes total sense.
Yeah, I don't know
what it is.
Because I love it. And I love, like, let me be real. This soundtrack was put together for me. Mm. This is 70s folk music with the snow. And that is, I was like, oh, can I buy this? And I looked, you can buy this soundtrack on vinyl. I may do that.
Because
it was all my shit where it's like, this is sound, like, you put fucking Cat Stevens in a montage and you got me. That's like, I'm such a sucker for that. I don't know what it is with 70s folk music. Yeah. My parents have listened to that. There's no reason for me to like fall in love with this kind of music, but I really have. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the plot a little bit. And let's get into, you know, Paul Giamatti. He was nominated for Best Actor here.
Yeah, and I've always loved him, and he's great in this.
I can't think of a time where I wasn't happy to see Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
And you know, the first time I saw him, and I think this was his first real big break, was Private Parts.
Yeah.
And we've covered that movie before on this show, but you know, I just love that, like, he still will do Howard Stern's show and say, like, if I win the Oscar, I'm going to thank you.
You
are the reason why I'm here.
Yeah.
I would love to work with you again.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, and you know, most people aren't so gracious when it comes to Howard Stern because he's kind of a fuck, you know.
Yeah,
but I love that Paul
Giamatti,
whenever someone appreciates their roots or what gave him a break, I always love that. Even like, when Neil Patrick Harris,
I was just about to bring that up.
Was on like the third Harold Kumar movie. Like, why are you're bigger than this? Why are you doing this? Like, these guys, I was forgotten about.
Yeah.
I was nobody. They brought me back, and I will do whatever they want for the end of time. I will do it because I'm at where I'm at because they because of them.
Yeah.
And I love when people don't forget stuff like that. It means a lot to me.
That similar thing happened in Super Sentai when Tamao Sato, who played Momo in O-Ranger, started dipping out more because she got real famous. She's like, you know, it girl, hot actress,
right.
You know, they kept casting her, so she wasn't in stuff, but she came back for Gokaiger when they did the reunion show where all the Rangers came back. They were like, oh, she's not going to do it because she's a big actress. And she's just like, I'm older now. And I realized like that was the reason I owe Super Sentai my career kind of thing. And so she came back and it was dope. So that was probably, I didn't mean to take that from you.
That's
probably going to bring that up.
I was going to, but I like to let you talk about Gokaiger instead of me.
Thank you.
Yeah. People will be upset if I talked about it and not you. Anyways, so yeah, I think that this movie, I had no idea. Honestly, you guys, I didn't know anything. I went in so blind, I only saw the poster of them standing in a broken Christmas ornament, and that's it. I didn't know anything else about this movie. Didn't know it took place in the 70s, whatever. So it takes place in the December of 1970 at the Barton Academy, a New England boarding school. And it follows the... What is Paul Giamatti's name in this? Paul Hunnam. It follows Paul Hunnam, who is a professor there who used to go to... this school when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's just a, you know, a private boys boarding school, which apparently, you know, you have to be pretty well off to go to.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of reminded me, actually, because we'll get into this character later. What was the lady? Divine is her real name. Mary Lamb. The she's like the cafeteria manager.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, I love her. She was in something else that I saw, and I can't, I don't know what it is, but I think she's awesome. She's so good. But she talked about how she worked there and was able to have her son go there, I think because she was working there, which is exactly what happened to me as a kid. My mom worked at a private school.
Oh.
And that performing arts school that I went to, I only was able to go there because I think it did cost like $20,000 a year to go.
Oh,
but my mom taught there, so I was able to go for free.
Oh, wow.
So that's why, like, I have all these stories of when I was a kid going to, like, these crazy vacations with my friend's parents because they were all loaded and they were all rich. And so, like, they would just, like, bring me along and, like, I didn't have to pay for anything. It was fucking awesome.
Wow.
But, yeah, so that I totally – that was a – like, oh, this is me. I was this, that kid.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay. So it is the last day before winter break, and you find out that every year on winter break at this school, there is one teacher who has the unfortunate task of watching all the boys who weren't able to go home for the holidays for whatever reason. And there usually is tends to be, you know, like, let's say 5 to 10 of them. And they are known as the holdovers, I'm supposing, I guess. They don't really, I guess that's what the name is from, right? Isn't those the people?
I think so.
I can't think of another reason why they call the holdovers. I just assume that.
Yeah.
so the it kind of just, you know, gets you through. Like, you see them in the dorms fucking around. You see them. You kind of get a sense of the characters. There's one kid who's kind of a prick, and he... is basically making fun of, like, other kids who are staying. And then the last thing they have to do before they leave is they have to go to one last class, which is Paul Giamatti's class, where he gives them their final exams. And he pretty much fails the entire class. And almost seems to like failing. And doesn't feel bad at all.
Yeah.
It seems to me that he fucking hates these rich kids.
Yes.
You know, like...
Yeah.
He's kind of lost... If he ever had, like, a spark to teach, I feel like that flame has been put out. Like, he does not have that. He's fuck these kids. Like, they're spoiled brats, and like, they want good grades, and it's just, they should study harder and learn this. After that, they end up going to one last mass, where you see the head cafeteria lady, Mary Lamb, sitting in the front row, and you see that her son, there's a picture of him on the wall, and he was just killed in the Vietnam War, right? It's Vietnam? 70s, right? 1970. When did Vietnam start? I don't even know. I'm going to say it's Vietnam. Yeah, it is Vietnam. So you see that he was just killed in the Vietnam War like a couple months ago, and she's obviously devastated by this. And right after the mass, everyone leaves, and except for the few people who end up staying, there's like 5 kids, until you see that guy who's being a dick, and he gets a phone call, and it's his mom saying, like, I'm gonna go off with your stepdad for a honeymoon. And then his point was like, well, you got married in May, why are you doing a honeymoon now?
Yeah.
And like, well, it's worked out this way, you know, just don't be difficult.
Yeah.
And so he's like begging her, please don't make me stay here, and she won't hear it and just hangs up on him. Pretty shitty.
Yeah.
And then now he is stuck to stay with the holdovers and Paul Giamatti, who he is in his class and doesn't really like.
Mm-hmm.
Is that about right? Did I get this?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. that's kind of like the first act, I think, is like getting you there. You find out later, like, you know, like you kind of get introduced to the boys. I was, you know, I thought this whole movie was going to be following these boys. And
yeah,
Paul
I was surprised about that, actually.
I thought that was the gimmick.
The holdovers. What are they going to get into?
They set you up for it, right? Yeah, they set you up for, like, this is the movie. Get ready. Like, you're about to meet all these characters and find out more about them. And maybe, I don't know. And then one of the guys who's there is like this, like, a guy with long hair, and says, I'm only here because my dad said I couldn't come home to a ski trip unless I cut my hair. I'm not doing it. So I thought he was going to cave. I guess he's not caving, but whatever. And they just mention how fucking rich. He's like, he flies a helicopter. He's fucking rich, whatever. Then, like, you meet the boys. They kind of, like, they get fucking, like, shafted, though. Like, oh, the dormitories are closed. The gym is closed. So what you guys have to do is you have to study. You could get detention, and you have to live in the infirmary because everything else has no heat. So there is, like, getting, like, it's really shit into this dick. You start feeling, you feel really bad for that guy who was a dick originally because he's like, well, this kid is just, like, abandoned by his family. Now he's in, like, the worst possible situation. And then, you know, you kind of, like, they start making little friendships or whatever, or, like, maybe a little rivalries. And then out of fucking nowhere, a helicopter shows up and is that rich kid's dad who ended up caving and then offered to take all the boys on a ski vacation over the Christmas holiday. Pretty nice. This fucking rich dad. So Paul Giamatti calls all the parents and the principal to make sure it's all okay. Everyone gives a thumbs up, but he cannot get a hold of the one kid who was being a dick. Which is, his name is Angus Tully. So Angus is the one kid who was stuck back with Paul Giamatti and Mary Lamb. And everyone else takes off to go on an amazing ski adventure, and he is just stuck in hell. He's stuck in hell. I don't know.
The kid who plays this character, I guess he had, like, not acted before.
Dominic Sessa.
Yeah,
he
was, like, not in anything before, which I thought was awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
He was good.
Yeah.
He had a weird look to him.
They really, like, didn't cast an actor, kind of. They just kind of got this kid to do
it. How do they do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, because, like, I by no, let me just say, I by no means am a great actor. You know, I'm by no means. But we have worked with people who aren't actors as well. And there are sometimes you get a non-actor and go, oh, you're pretty good. But there's most of the time, they're not. You know, they can read the line to you, but that's as far as it can go. You know, like when you give, like, a baseball player a read for a commercial, they're going to read the script, but they're not gonna put anything behind it, you know. And that is what most, so the fact that people, like, just like, oh yeah, we'll cast this non-actor, that's pretty, it's pretty good. Okay, cool. Am I missing anything, or am I kind of, I think I'm kind of right.
I mean,
I don't think so. Okay, so then a lot, I mean, I'm kind of skipping around, but Paul Giamatti this whole time is, it seems like everything that could go wrong with a person is wrong with this poor man. He, like, has a wandering, lazy eye. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I didn't know how they did. I thought, oh, has Paul Giamatti just always been that way?
See, that now that shows you that's good.
Yeah, I really had that thought. Then I found out later, no, it was an effect. And then I heard, oh, the director doesn't want to reveal how they did that. So they, and I'm like, damn, how did they do that? Wow, that was really cool. And then Howard Stern show, Paul Giamatti was on and immediately was just, no, I had a big soft contact lens. Like, it covered that part of my eye and it made it look like I had a lazy eye. I was like, oh, okay, no, thanks. I don't know what the secrecy was before.
What's funny is that, like, I think that was supposed to be a secret, but Paul Giamatti, again, loves Howard Stern.
I'm
just going to tell you. Whatever. I think, but yeah, they wouldn't tell people on set how he was doing it, and they couldn't figure it out. And I guess it made him blind in that eye. So, like, while he was, like, acting, he just couldn't see out of that eye.
And they wanted him to, like, drive. Okay, just pull up to the curb. It's like, what fucking curb?
I have no depth perception here.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, a lot of people only have one eye, and I do wonder that.
Yeah.
Like, how do you drive?
I mean, maybe for a if you have a lifetime, you get used to it, you acclimate, whatever, but I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, he hadn't acclimated because he's just doing this for this role. He also has a weird thing where I guess, like, he smells bad They said some term for it, but it's like his body can't produce some kind of thing, and so it makes him smell fishy by the end of the day.
Oh.
Then he has like super wet hands, like his sweats a lot through his hands. Like it's just like this poor guy just seems to have everything that could be wrong with a person has been thrown his way, and he's just that's why he's probably so fucking angry.
Yeah.
Anyways, so we stuck with this kid, Angus, who he does not particularly like. Angus is stuck with Paul Giamatti, who he does not particularly like. And then there's Mary Lamb, who everyone seems to like. Actually, I think Paul Giamatti maybe has a crush on her, but I haven't really, you don't really go into that. But anyways, Angus at one point, they're eating dinner in the cafeteria or whatever, and, is very like, can make a phone call. And then he basically tries to just like, No, can I go to the bathroom? He ends up, Paul Giamatti sees him making a phone call. He wasn't allowed to do that. He gets in trouble. And Angus starts losing his mind, like running around the school, like causing havoc. Goes into the gym, does a flip off of a springboard.
Yeah.
And dislocates his arm and is really hurt.
Ugh, yeah.
Which, okay, so they take him to the hospital. Paul Giamatti takes him to the hospital. And is thinking, like, I'm going to get fucking fired. Like, I'm fired. Like, I should. Yeah. Even though, like, Angus is being a fucking dickhead. And, and then Paul Giamatti's like, don't do this. And then he did it. When they had him shirtless and they were popping his shoulder back in, it looked like his shoulder was fucked up.
Yeah.
And he was shirtless. And I was like, how did they do that?
Yeah. I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Because it looked like a dislocated shoulder. Yeah. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
They pop it back in. Angus ends up lying to the doctor saying like, oh yeah, my uncle here, he told me I had to do something and I did it. I shouldn't have done it, but like I don't have insurance, but like we'll pay for it. Don't worry about it. And lies and covers Paul Giamatti's ass. It makes it so he doesn't get fired. And so it kind of builds a little bit of trust and a little bit of friendship between the two. And then the rest of the movie essentially is this, these two seemingly very likely characters like becoming friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They go to that Christmas party.
They go to a Christmas party.
Together.
Right. Paul Giamatti is like, hey, you know what? Like, no Christmas. Like, I'm not doing anything for you for fucking Christmas. And then Mary Lamb was like, he's like abandoned on Christmas. You have to do something for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he goes off to a lot on Christmas morning and buys like a shitty tree, but it's just something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then tells Angus like, hey, I'll get you whatever you want. I'll do it for you. And then Angus, this whole movie is like, I want to go to Boston. And you don't know why, but he wants to go to Boston. He's already in New England, so it's not too far away.
Yeah.
But it's far enough away that he can't get there. He's just a kid. Although, I mean, I think he's like 17 or 18. Probably 17.
Yeah.
And so they end up, the three of them, Mary Lamb, Angus, and Paul Giamatti all go to Boston together. Paul Giamatti says, like, well, we'll call it a field trip. Fine, I'll take you. He takes them there. They kind of are having, like, a good time. I guess there's a part where they're, like, out, this, like, outside library. Remember this part? And then a prostitute comes up to him.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And asks, like, hey, you can just like the kid can stay here and you can go around the corner if you want or whatever. I guess the director said that really happened to him in real life. It was like in the 70s and his uncle and him were at some place and then he was seven and the prostitute's like, just go around the corner and like, leave the kid here. And it's like, he said like he always remembered that being a kid being like, dude, we're going to leave me and do what? Like he couldn't figure out what was happening. So that was kind of like a nod to his uncle. They go see a movie. Angus takes off during the movie, gets in a cab, and Paul Giamatti realizes that he was abandoned, finds him in the cab, and it's like, what, like, just you're like, plan all along was to escape. And he's like, I just want to go see my dad, who you've been told has died. And Paul Giamatti's like, I'll take you to, I'll go with you to the cemetery. I'll take you to a cemetery
in Boston, right?
In Boston.
That's why you want it. Yeah.
Right. Then you find out he's not dead. He's not in a cemetery, but he is in a institution because he is mentally unwell.
Yeah.
And I kind of guessed that was going to happen. You know, like once he said my dad was dead, I'm like, I don't know. Like he's trying to see his dad. Like I can't imagine a scene like at a cemetery, him crying or I don't know what, you know, this made a lot more sense. His dad sees him is happy at first, and then Angus is trying to just, like, catch him up on his life, tell him all these things, and the dad is, does not care. And he's just like, I think they're poisoning my food. And that's all he says to him. And it's really sad because it's like he was already abandoned by his mom.
Yeah.
And now his dad is just not capable of getting past his mental block or whatever is happening with him. And it is like a crushing moment to see that. They end up going back to the school. Angus looks devastated. Paul Giamatti has somewhat kind of become like a fatherly figure, or at least a friend figure to him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they get back to the school. Paul Giamatti starts teaching again because it's back in session. And seemingly he's changed a little bit. He kind of has a softer side to him. He maybe appreciates the kids a little bit more, at least Angus more. And is just grateful to be where he's at and not hate it so much. And then you see that he's called into the headmaster's office, Paul Giamatti is, and then you see Angus sitting outside waiting. And then inside are Angus's mom and dad, or stepdad, who are pissed because Angus went to go visit his biological dad and said like all the damage he's done because of this and how it's all fucked because of him. And they're going to kick Angus out of this school, and he's going to have to go to military school.
Yeah.
And Paul Giamatti, for like the first time, realizes like how important it is for Angus to stay at Barton, the school he's at, and sacrifices his job and says, this is all my idea.
Yeah.
And he lies, saying like, this is my idea. I made him do this. He didn't even want to do it. I made him. Which in turn means that Paul Giamatti gets fired and Angus can stay at the school. Yeah. And then, you know, kind of ends with like Angus saying like, thanks a lot. You know, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. And then like, do you want to go get a burger? And then Paul Giamatti's like, you're just trying to get out of school. I'm not going to let you do that. And then drives off. And that's the end of the movie. Like I just kind of blazed through that. Sorry. But like, that was kind of like it's a very simple, but very character-driven movie, I thought.
Yeah.
What do you think about, like, what do you think about things that I just watched the whole movie?
I really like the characters in it a lot. I think, again, if this had been cast with anybody else, I don't know if it'd be as compelling.
I agree. Like,
Paul Giamatti is so good, and the kid is so good. Mm-hmm. Everyone is cast well in this movie. You know, the story is... I don't really think that's why people are drawn to this.
I agree. I think
it isn't some revelation. No, it's you know, them.
The kids being left at boarding school or holidays is like every Harry Potter movie. Like that, is, you know, that just happens.
Yeah.
But yes, I think that the way that they portrayed it and did it is a very compelling way with the characters, especially.
Yeah.
And you like everyone, even like, you know, Angus is such a dick sometimes, but you still root for him and you want him to not steal things and like to be better because you see the potential in him.
Yeah.
Which is what Paul Giamatti ends up seeing, and that's why he sacrifices his job for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like at the end, it just, you know, it's just Paul Giamatti driving away and then it just goes and this ends. And I kind of feel like Paul Giamatti would have stayed there forever until he died.
Yeah.
He would have lived that life forever. And maybe he needed this. Like, maybe this was good for him, was to get out of the place. You know, he's almost kind of embarrassed that he's back there teaching where he went to high school and, like, didn't make more of himself. Because all the kids there become, like, super fucking, like, Fortune 500 CEOs or whatever. And he's just a teacher.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. There.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that was, like, he's embarrassed about it. And so, like, later he's like, you know, like, they're saying you should write a book or whatever. You should, you know, all these things, write about it.
There's also something about being a teacher that I think as a device in a movie like this always kind of works in a way. It's the safe. What am I trying to say? It's the safe occupation in terms of, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's very hard being a teacher. I'm not saying anything otherwise. But it's kind of like the same reason Walter White is a teacher in Breaking Bad. It's kind of the job you could pick. No one can kind of ever talk shit on that. You're a teacher. Good. Oh, good.
I mean,
you know, it's kind of like, yeah, it is good. And then you kind of just stick with that. No, again, no knock on being a teacher whatsoever, but there's a certain personality type like this, like Walter White, kind of when he was kind of in his own little shell, is, I don't mean to compare this to Breaking Bad, but you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of the thing where kind of no one can get to you. No, you know, you're the teacher. That's where you'll get respect.
Right.
It's an easy recipe for respect as opposed to like going further and doing this and doing that.
I will say that, you know, in my, not my immediate family, but in my like extended family.
Yeah.
My brother, who is a teacher.
Yeah.
Gets way more respect than I do for my job, you know, like his job is serious. My job is messing around, you know? And so I live that. I see that.
So none of this is knocking being a teacher. I'm just saying certain personality types like this are really drawn to it for that reason. It's like, well, that I could stay there and kind of nothing, the world can't bother me kind of thing, you know? And I remember thinking that during Breaking Bad and actually I think it was Bryan Cranston kind of talked about that. Like, this is where he's safe, you know, kind of thing. And I kind of see that here.
Yeah, you see that.
With the holdovers. I feel like that. Yeah. If he never had anything shaken up, he would have been there forever.
And like he needed that, you know. And it's fine. I like a movie where it just takes place over like a handful of days and someone's life changes drastically and no one saw that coming. You know, like it was just, everything was the status quo until a series of events happened and now everything has changed in your whole life. And I do like movies like that where you see an instant change with somebody. And like, I was truly glad that it ended where it did. Like, I love an ending like that where he just like says goodbye to Angus and drives away and like, you never know if he sees him again.
You don't know
if he ever wrote a book.
Yeah.
You don't know. It says that was the end of that. The 2 weeks is over. That's it. You know?
I
like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that it was not the feel-good movie I was promised.
I don't know. I was told that so much about this.
Me too. I mean,
but I feel like that's just not. It's not like, well, I hate it because it wasn't that. Nothing like that. I just don't feel like that's the best way to package this.
No, I mean, I definitely felt things watching it, and I enjoyed it, but I didn't feel all warm and cozy inside by this movie. And I didn't feel like, well, every winter I'm going to pop this on Christmas time. Like, you know, it wasn't that kind of a movie. But again, I do think it was beautiful in the character development and the characters themselves and the acting. You know, there was a lot about it. And we argued on this a little bit. We disagreed, but like the aesthetic of it was very awesome for me.
And again, just to clarify, there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
I don't know why I have a bug up my ass when I don't know what it is. I actually don't know what it is. So I'm not saying fuck this, you know, whatever. It didn't really get in the way or anything. They didn't like scuff the movie up so bad that it was like, geez,
yeah,
I would have liked to have seen that cleaner or anything. It's fine. I was just expressing a personal weird tick.
You know, you're allowed to your opinions.
But they really painted a world in this, like, in as weird or corny as that sounds, they did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you buy where they're at.
I believed all of it.
Yeah.
I was even thinking, like, the shots of Boston. I love when it's like, it looked like it was the 70s to me. And, you know, I don't, like, I go to Boston enough. I've been to Boston probably, you know, 12 times. So I've seen it.
Yeah.
But, I believed it. I just, the whole thing I bought into. So that was cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to do Shakers?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's say you pick the movie. You can go first.
If you're looking for really compelling character stuff, you got it in droves here. It's really great. So I that gets major points from me. I've always been a story guy. That's the kind of, you know, everybody's got their thing that they're looking for. I was looking for kind of more of a, I don't know, the story in this, I didn't really feel like was super unique. That didn't really compel me. It was the people that did.
Mm-hmm.
As such, I don't know. It's hard for me to say. It wasn't my favorite, but the characters are really good. It's hard because I feel like two sounds too low.
That sounds pretty low.
But three is up. You know, I do two. I only pick two because it's like there's good stuff, but I won't probably watch it again. Mm. So I wanted to say that, but then I feel like three is too high where it's like, yeah, it was good, but I don't know
why you hate The Half so much. I'm all about The Half.
I don't know. I always feel weird about why? The point.
I mean, people give 3.5 stars. That's a thing.
Yeah, okay. Maybe that'll be my new thing for this year.
I don't know
why
you're so against it.
Yeah, I'm going to put it right in the middle. I'll do 2.5.
Okay.
It's right in the middle. Again, super compelling characters. Really creates a vibe and does it well. And I think everyone really brought their A game to that side of it. The story wasn't really compelling to me. I don't know if I'll watch this again, but yeah.
You know, I was thinking about the movies that we've seen so far that have been nominated for Best Picture, which is The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things,
yes.
And Barbie. They're all so drastically different,
yeah,
which I do like.
Yeah.
I do like that they are all like, these are nothing like each other,
yeah.
Which is cool.
You know, we didn't do a Barbie episode, though. We could do a Barbie episode.
We didn't do a Barbie
episode. But I feel like
episode.
We talked about
it on the podcast.
It's like, what else needs to be said about Barbie?
We talked about it.
Yeah.
On the main podcast, for sure.
Yeah.
I think I liked this more than... I like this more than several of the movies we've watched for Best Picture already. I really did like it.
Yeah.
It did, like, again, the soundtrack was my shit. That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I really liked it. I think Paul Giamatti, I hope he wins. Like, I really like him, and I'm happy for him just to be nominated. But I always root. There's people I root for in this world, and he's one of them. So I would love this for Paul Giamatti, and I did think he was great in this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a 4. I really liked it. So I kind of feel like I've been giving all these movies are 4, and that's kind of like,
yeah.
I don't know how that's working out, but they're all so different from each other, but this is a 4 for me. I thought it was great.
Yeah, this is probably my least favorite of all the nominees so far. I just didn't think about it a ton when it was over. Mm-hmm. Whereas these other ones, for better or for worse, for better. I thought about all of them a long time afterwards.
Yeah.
More than this one. So, yeah. Now, we keep saying I picked it, so it's my turn, but
no,
I don't think I picked it.
But we kind of both, like...
yeah, we don't.
Because you picked Poor Things, I picked this. You're right.
Yeah.
So I picked this, so this is your pick.
Okay, this one is actually my pick.
This
one is actually my pick. Next week, we're going to watch a movie I don't know literally anything about other than every now and then I have another person recommend to me, like, oh my, yeah, you should watch this. I want to say maybe Kojima wrote something about this the other day, too.
Mm.
I'm not sure, but it's another Best Picture nominee, Past Lives.
Past Lives, okay.
I don't know if that's
I don't know anything.
From another country.
I know nothing.
I have no clue.
No idea. But we'll find out.
Yes.
Okay, let's watch Past Lives, and we'll see you next week. And we'll probably be back on the normal set. So thank you so much for watching this. And yeah, go check out Past Lives. Thanks for subbing the Patreon. Look at the mouse so far away.
Yeah, I was going to see how you were going to pull off the reach at the end.
It looks cool. All right. We'll see you guys later. Goodbye.
Bye.